Welcome to the Awaken Therapist podcast, where we explore a holistic and transpersonal approach to psychotherapy. In season four, you'll hear live therapy demos, case consultations, and dynamic teachings designed to awaken transformation in yourself, your clients, and the world. I'm your host, Harmony Quiker. As a psychotherapist, author, and visiting instructor at Naropa University, I created this podcast to empower you to deepen your presence, expand your awareness, and trust the sacred unfolding that happens in authentic therapeutic contact. To learn more about our trainings, community, and resources, check us out at awakentherapist.com. In this episode, I'm joined by Lori Lazar, founder of The Realness Project, a nonprofit bringing trauma-informed, connection-centered programs into maximum security prisons. For the past 7 years, Lori has been creating spaces inside prison walls where people can move beyond isolation, shame, and survival patterns and reconnect with their humanity. Lori's work is really a testament to the power of human connection as a catalyst for healing. When we're met with presence, honesty, and real relational contact, the parts of us that have organized around survival can begin to shift toward dignity, truth, and connection. This episode is a powerful reminder that even in environments shaped by violence and incarceration, relational healing is still possible. You know, we met briefly at an Authentic Relating weekend where we were both serving as assistant course leads, and I've just been following your work from the sidelines for a while now, and just have such deep respect with how you bring connection and education about connection to people who are in prison. And I would love to just hear how you arrived at the Realness Project and at this offering.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to share this with the world, Harmony, because really what's happening is so extraordinary. And I just spend so much time behind bars and not really sharing it with the world. So thank you. Thank you. How this started was I discovered Authentic Relating back in 2014. And although I'd done tons of different trainings and different therapies and stuff, this work really shifted the way I showed up in my relationships, most importantly with my relationship with myself, and then with my relationship with my partner and my family. And it was just extraordinary how it just shifted everything for me. And then in 2017, I saw a movie that played at the Dairy in Boulder just one night. It was a documentary about a guru that had his satsangs closed circuit TV into the prison. It didn't sugarcoat it. It followed like three different people that were so lit up about the work inside, and then they left. And one of them ended up going back to prison. But anyway, that movie just lit something in me. And the next day I got online and I found an opportunity to volunteer at the Boulder County Jail. And it felt as though my world was sort of opening up in a way that was like an answer to a prayer that I'd had a long time in my heart. And that prayer was that I wanted my heart to be involved in my daily work. I'd mostly worked in the corporate world doing recruiting, and I'd also had a master's in education, and I'd taught some along the way, sort of on the side. And so I started going into the Boulder County Jail, and one of the guys in there was like, "You seem like you're at home here." Right away, I'm like, that's such an odd thing to say because I've never been in jail before, but it's true. Like something about it, I felt it was like going home for me. And one of the other volunteers said, "You seem like you already know how to do this. Like, how do you know how to do this?" And my answer was just like everything I'd ever done in my life, I felt like it led me to this moment. And that work was a victim impact class that I was co-facilitating. And it didn't quite, you know, I thought, gosh, this other work really impacted my life, the Authentic Relating. And it just so happened that Ryle Castano, who's been a dear friend for years, was just at that same time starting a company called Authentic Relating Training International, ART International. And he said, "Lori, why don't we bring it into the Boulder County Jail?" And we did. So January 19th, 2018 was the first day that I believe that Authentic Relating was ever brought into an institution. And we didn't know what to expect. We really didn't. And the first day there was a guy who had tats like his whole body, like even on his eyelids. And he said, "You know, I've done every therapy I can get my hands on inside and outside the system, every program. And this is the first day I feel like something's gotten into me and I have this whole new possibility for my life. And so that was a good sign. And then at the end of the day, the next day, there were guys in there who had been in out of the system for like 10, 20 years. And they said to us, there's nothing like this in the system. This is what we need. Please bring this everywhere. So that was the day I felt like I really got my marching orders. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to use my recruiting skills. I was really good at like building a spreadsheet and calling and keeping track of my calling. And I started calling prisons in Colorado and saying, hey, we have this program. Can we come in and do it? And I got a lot of no's. And then I got a yes from a prison called Centennial down in Canyon City. So it turns out there's 11 prisons down in Canyon City. I used to think that was like, there was one there when I drive through that town, but there's actually 11. There's a whole campus of prisons. And Centennial is one of those on this campus. It's for sex offenders and for people who are very mentally challenged. And that was the first prison that said yes. And I was like, okay. And the guy, the program manager said, do you want to work with the sex offenders or do you want to work with the mentally challenged guys? And I was like a deer in the headlights. Like, I really don't know how to answer that question. I said, why don't we start with the mentally challenged guys? So we got there that morning. It was 7:30 in the morning. We're at this very, the highest security prison level that this is. You know, Ryle and I had never been in a prison. Actually, the other guy that was with us was a therapist at the Boulder County Jail. And he came, so it was the three of us. And he'd never been to prison either. And we got there and they said, well, you know, we tried to fill the class up with the mentally challenged guys, but they're like labeled like, you know, numbered level five, level four, level three. We couldn't fill it up with the level five and level four. And if we'd had the level three in, then we would have had to have everyone handcuffed hands and feet, the whole class. So instead of doing that, we filled it up the rest with the sex offenders. And we're like, okay, let's go. So we jump right in and we did a 2-day program, which was basically the program that I had done on the outside with Art International. And it was so beautiful and so profound. And so that was the first course. And then since then, we've done this now with 1,400 individuals inside the Colorado State System in groups of anywhere from like 8 to well, the biggest group we ever had was 65 in one room, but generally it's somewhere between 20 and 30.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm over here just deeply impacted taking this all in. And I have so much admiration. I can feel even just the courage it takes to show up for this and the gift that you're really offering folks who don't have access to anything this beautiful and meaningful and connecting. You had mentioned the impact that you had with authentic relating was so much greater in terms of how you related to yourself and connected to those around you. And for me too, like I had been a therapist for so long and I teach Gestalt therapy, which is so related to authentic relating, but it's also so different. And the piece around how we learn to regulate our nervous system, how our attachment system gets repaired just by being in connection in this way, how we come into greater presence and open up to new potential of how to be with one another. It's like magic. And knowing that you're doing this with up to 65 prisoners where, you know, the circumstances are so dire.
You know, I was surprised, Harmony, when I started, you know, because getting into this, I started learning about the prison system. And I had no idea really about, you know, therapy inside prisons, which is almost doesn't exist. I mean, it's very little, very few people actually have a therapist in prison or anyone that they can talk to about anything, which it was a surprise to me. I guess I just thought that people in prison were getting therapy because, you know, we can imagine how everyone needs it. And that's just not true. Even when people are suicidal, they might get a visit or a little more attention, but that's the only way that they even get any attention from someone who has credentials like that. So it's really, really needed. And you know, human connection heals. And so, you know, what we're doing is, it's just really profound to be able to bring this into these spaces. So, you know, what we're doing is, you know, we go in with a group of anywhere between 2 and like 6 of us that will go into a prison and lead a program. And we go in, we set up a circle, and we sit in that circle, interspersed. So we're not all sitting together at the front of the room, which most people in prison are used to that. If people come in, they're sort of gathered together. There's sort of a maybe even a table in between them to kind of have that distance. And we definitely, right from the start, are like, no, we're all together doing this together. We're human beings exploring what it is to be human together. And if I'm not leading that section, I'm going to be in. And so, and how the structure goes is we'll, introduce a topic, and then we'll quickly get into groups of two or three and practice. And so I'm practicing right along, and we all are practicing alongside everyone. And then we'll get back together and have a debrief and like, how was that for you? What did you notice? And have this open discussion, which sometimes I think the open discussions are like almost the most incredible gift to give, because they don't get to do that. Just have open, honest, authentic, raw, real discussions with one another about important things, about how they feel, about what's happening for them in their lives, what's happening here, in the group, in the circle. And so it's really, that's kind of the format.
You said you introduce a topic, and I'm imagining this is like a technology of authentic relating topic, like maybe starting with the noticing game, or for folks who have never experienced authentic relating, would you just say more about that?
Yeah, definitely. And yes, definitely the noticing game is something we do early on in the course. And so, basically we start out talking about, Gabor Mate and his, idea that we come into this world with two basic needs, and that is for self-expression and attachment. And early on in our lives, a lot of times that our self-expression gets kind of squashed in service of that attachment to some adult or somebody that's taking care of us. And that authentic relating is this modality that can help us start to bring back that authentic expression of ourselves that we might have lost touch with entirely by the time we are this age as an adult. So that's sort of what we're doing. And have our attachments be up more authentic than, and have not have to try to be something else to be in connection with other people. And so we start out with talking about the five practices of authentic relating, which, is something that Art International and Realness Project kind of co-came up with together based on other work we did at the Integral Center that used to exist here in Boulder that was called T3, and it had all kinds of principles and practices. And so we sort of distilled it down to these five practices. And this is the container for the rest of the work. So these five practices are a way of like turning towards life in a different way. And they're a little bit different for the public course now and what we do. We've sort of shifted it to the first one is welcome my experience. So the first practice of authentic relating is to begin to welcome our own experience, whatever that is. And that we really can't get very far if we don't do that. If we're just completely resisting or denying, not willing to look at our own experience, it's really difficult to engage and in authentic connection with ourselves and others. And so there's welcome my experience. The second one is check my assumptions. So then I'm going to check my assumptions. What are my story, the stories I'm making up about myself and others that I might have made up when I was a very small child, or someone told me it and I believed it, some story about myself or about the world. And so we start to look at like, how can we check our own assumptions? The third practice is reveal my experience. So then we start to like open up and reveal. And the first step again is revealing to our own selves, what are we maybe not willing to look at or be in denial, or what light can we turn in the house of ourselves and be willing to go there and reveal what's there. And so that's really the doorway to connection. The fourth one is own my experience. Owning our experience can, sometimes take a lifetime to do. It's a great thing to work with therapists on, and how to kind of really own my experience. Why am I showing up this way? And why do I have these particular patterns? And so owning my experience can take, a lot of work and journaling and, all kinds of different ways to learn to own our experience. It also can happen in a moment just by changing our languaging, right? And changing the way we speak about things. Instead of saying, "You're making me angry," I can say, "I'm angry." One thing I realized is that for me, growing up, my mom was very had a lot of narcissistic tendencies, and I really learned to orient towards my mom at a very young age, and like what will make her happy, and how I can be a person that makes my mom happy. And so, as an adult, I didn't even realize that I'd lost touch with my own experience. What makes Lori happy, you know? And so, owning my experience has also been that, like, I'm going to own in this. How can I own my experience, my own experience? So there's all those different layers of owning our experience. But that's really where we take our power back. That sort of the place in the five practices where we can take our power back. And then the last one is a duo, and that is honoring myself slash honoring others. And this word honoring is such a rich word to explore for our own selves. And talking about honoring in prison is really beautiful experience. Like, how are we already honoring ourselves, and what more can we bring in all different ways to honor ourselves? And then what does it look like to honor others? And that includes, like, you know, allowing other people to not like me or disagree with me and have a completely different orientation towards life, and honoring that, not just putting up with it. It's really honoring that in other people, the differences that we have. But then also, like, honoring how can I actually be more considerate? How can I be more inclusive, or, you know, things like that. So there's so many things that we can talk about in that realm. And we talk about a lot, you know, like, it's good to notice, like, am I someone that generally tends to honor others over myself, and that's my general tendency, or the other way around, I honor myself over others. And sometimes it's great to be able to look at how can I balance that and bring that more into balance. And it's not always appropriate to be in balance. You know, like, there's times where it's like, I need to have my boundaries, or I need to honor my word that I gave, even though I'd rather stay home, or you know, rather not do the thing. And so it's just a conversation to be in around what does honoring look like for you?
Yeah, these five principles, I haven't heard them in so long, but now that you've named them, I'm just reminded not only how nuanced they are, just even welcome my own experience. That alone is so revealing and transformative. And as you were talking about it, I teach transpersonal counseling, and this podcast is really geared towards transpersonal counselors. When we're able to welcome our own experience, we become that compassionate witness. As opposed to just like being in our story and our meaning making, we're now accessing a greater aspect of ourselves. And I love that this one comes first, because when everything else can come from that foundation of accessing a more expansive, wise aspect of ourselves, it's easier to own our experience and to reveal and to honor ourselves and honor others. I'm also just so curious if you're willing to share like some of the breakthroughs that you see with this, because the technology is so simple, but it's so deep. And I imagine you all go so deep.
Yeah, we do. I'll tell you a little bit about the current structure of what we're doing, and then I would love to share some examples. Before COVID, we were just doing the 2-day program called The Art of Being Human. And we did that a bunch, like 45 times in different prisons before COVID. And then COVID gave us a chance to slow down and really reevaluate. And it was a lot in 2 days to deliver all of that in just 2 days and then be gone, right? So during that time, we designed a longer version and spreading out some of the tools that we're bringing. And so now we deliver what we call the relational leadership training. So that's what we're mostly delivering now, the relational leadership training. And so, how can we each become relational leaders in our own lives in very small ways to very big ways, right? And it's so great to bring that into prisons and being just people showing up and signing up for a course called relational leadership, that they're going to be a leader and think of themselves as a leader when they've so been squashed down and demeaned and told that they're a piece of shit so much from their childhood, but also while in prison. And so, you know, what we're bringing is so the opposite of what prison is designed to do, which is separate, isolate, and denigrate. And, you know, we're bringing the opposite of that, like connection and upliftment. And so the course, the way it is designed, is the beginning is delivering these tools and really getting a foundation of, like, authentic relating human connection tools. So we have a whole tool belt. And then once we've established that tool belt, then we give people a chance to share the story of their life. It's called, we call the lowdown. And they don't have to, this is completely optional. It's so liberating. People just are so grateful for this opportunity to share about their lives. And so many of them share things they've never told anyone ever in their life. And they share it. And meanwhile, we're all practicing the skills we've learned. So we're listening with a much more open heart, without judgment, and just openness. And they're speaking into the space. And then when they're done speaking, go really slowly. If people want to hear from us, then we go into the sort of popcorn style, just words. What did people hear? Just what words that they heard. So it's a very simple way to get a reflection without any kind of judgment, but just words. And just that alone can be profound for people to hear that they were heard, and like the kinds of words that they're hearing and phrases that they might not even know that they said. And then we'll go a cut deeper, which a deeper reflection of what people heard, and then sharing impact. How did it impact people to hear what they heard? And then maybe some questions, some curiosities if they want to hear that. And then they get to kind of do a summary, whatever that they want to say before they're done. And so we do this. It's very heavy and deep, as you might imagine. Like the trauma that people are sharing is a lot. And so then we do like a nervous system regulation, that we've already practiced prior, like between each thing. We might do shaking, we might do breathing. There's different things that we'll do, a movement to kind of move the energy. And people, then the next person will go, and we do a few each day. And then we also do conflict resolution. We use the same tool belt to say, like, okay, now, let's use it to somebody's coming at you with some big emotion. Like, how do we use these tools? Or how do we bring something that might be difficult to bring to someone else? That's something, and that was big for me. I would bottle up everything. I'd notice myself thinking, like, I want to say this to my partner, but I don't know how to say it because I know he doesn't want to hear it. And it's already going through some stuff. And like, how do I bring that? And so these skills gave me the ability to set the stage so someone could hear what I had to say. And so that's basically what we're doing. So in that, there's all kinds of, breakthroughs that people have. I'll share, like, for example, what one of the guys in our program shared. He grew up in Southside Chicago, and it was a really crazy time. And he, one of his first memories, he was a little kid, and he was sitting on the console in between his mom and dad in the car, and his older brother's in the back seat, summer day, windows down, and they pull up to a light, and there's a man in the car next to them who says something to his mother about how beautiful she is. And his dad pushes him off the console and pulls a gun out and goes right past his nose and shoots into the car next to him. And he puts the gun back, closes the console, and just very nonchalantly keeps driving. And that's how Robert learned to deal with conflict. And he said in our program that he'd never been shown another way until this course, that there's other ways of dealing with conflict. And at this point, both he and his two older brothers were all in prison here in Colorado because they moved to Colorado. He talked about how his other early memories were like his mom was single mom now because she divorced him and she was trying to create a better life, but she just didn't have the income. And they said living in the projects. And he remembers the older brothers coming around on, or the older boys come around on their bicycles and stuff and like giving their mom money to pay the rent. And they were his heroes, right? Those boys were his heroes because they could help mom put food on the table. And they were drug dealers. They were pimps. They were gang members. And so that's who he saw in his world. Those were the heroes. That's what he wanted to grow up to be. So when he was 11, he learned to cook meth. And he realized he could start selling that and making money and helping his mom pay the rent. And he felt like a hero when he was 11. He could do this for his family. And he started teaching his friends because he wanted all his friends to be able to eat as well. And he started teaching them how to cook meth. And so they can do it. And pretty soon he's sort of a drug lord because he's like very charismatic and he's teaching his kids how to sell drugs. He ends up in prison. And so this is his kind of world, right? And he got into authentic relating and he was just like, oh my God. I want this for everyone. I want this for all the youth. I want the, you know, he's like, if I would have learned these things, how to, you know, welcome my own experience, my own difficult feelings of hatred and this feeling of not belonging anywhere. And, you know, all of that, just that act of starting to welcome those feelings was a game changer for him. And so that's just one sort of example.
It's powerful. It's so powerful. And I'm imagining they learn to receive one another in a different way so that they soften in this connection with each other while being heard in their story and received in this way.
Absolutely. I mean, you're really touching on something that I think is one of the most important things that is happening from our programming, is that softening. And I feel like I have some sensitivity to that. Like, I love sitting in a circle where people are all guarded at first, and then there's this softening and this opening, and there's this way that everyone starts to open up and their nervous system relaxes. And you know, in a prison system, it's so heightened. It's like this in there, all of the interruptions with the intercom and things happening and announcements of some emergency happening. And, you know, you might even see like through the window of where we're leading the course in the gym, like all the staff running by to like go handle something that's happening. People are just on edge. And so when they're given a chance to be in a room for several hours and just soften and open up and share vulnerably about what's really happening for them, it's game changing.
You know, when I went through authentic relating, it actually really transformed the way I did couples counseling, specifically because I learned that we don't need those barriers and protection and defenses to go away to be in connection. We just need to be able to welcome them, own them, and reveal them, which is
Right.
what ultimately transforms them.
And that's exactly right. Welcoming, owning, revealing. I mean, that is what we're doing. And it's so true. Just naming them can sometimes just give it flight, just give it, just it dissipates. It's incredible. And even if it doesn't, it's like it's here with us. We can be in relationship with, you know.
Right, it's not implicitly driving what's happening. We now are all aware that this is here, which transforms the connection immediately.
That's right. That's right. And that's one of the tenets of authentic relating, is making the implicit explicit and making the hidden revealed, and how that changes everything inside of me and between us. It's really true.
Yeah, so amazing. So amazing. I find myself wondering if the guards experience this also, because I hear such horror stories sometimes about guards and prisons. And so,
Yeah.
do they have access to this work also?
You know, it's so tricky. It's one of the reasons we changed our name during COVID also. When we first started the nonprofit, we were called Authentic Relating International, which was very close to our sister organization, has the word training in there. Like there's art and there was RE. But I found that when we really wanted to work with guards and COs, but as soon as they hear authentic relating, they're like, yeah, what is that? You know, that's like an instant turn off, right? So we switched to Realness Project because it has more of an edge to it. And it's also like we can do anything in that. We can do more, you know, parts work, and we can do inner child work and things like that that we're bringing in as well. And it's not just authentic relating. And so we've done one staff training that's been all staff. I always say, like, I want staff to participate. And this one staff came, and it was early on when I said to one of the program managers in Rifle, Colorado, where we were going, I'm like, can you invite your boss or your boss's boss? Because we need to get funded and we need to figure out where, you know, where the funding comes from. And he's like, well, I'll invite my boss, but she's very conservative and I don't know that she'll go for this type of thing. And she was like in her 70s, and she came in and she's this little petite person. And I said, well, you know, it would be much better if you could participate and not just observe. And she's like, okay, I'm in. And she was in, and she participated. She was in the whole time, just participating with all these guys. And at the end, she was so fired up. And she's like, I want this for all the staff. I want this for everyone. And like, you know, let's do this. And so we did an offsite with her where we did the first 2 days, and then she had a whole day with her staff after that. And it was a really powerful program. You know, it's different when you're doing it with a group that doesn't opt in. Like it was part of their mandatory offsite. And so even though they were all pre-release managers and they were kind of a little maybe more open to this type of thing than the guards are. It was still real tricky getting them in, and and halfway through the first day, my partner David said, I want to take a poll. Who here already has something that makes these 2 days worth it? And some hands went up. Who here, you haven't gotten the thing yet, but you're engaged, you're in, you're in, and hands went up. And who here is like, you know what? No, this is not my thing. I'm going to clench my teeth through this whole thing and get through it, but I would not be here if I didn't have to be. And one hand went up like this, and it was this woman. Her name's Jada, and she's like, I don't do feelings in public, and this is not my thing. And David said, okay, I hear you. So our hope for you is that by the end of tomorrow that you've drank the Kool-Aid. And she was like, yeah, good luck with that. So the end of the next day, she comes running up to us and she's like, Lori, you can call me Kool-Aid. And I was like, what? She said, here's the thing. She's like, my grandfather was a guard in the prison system. And then my dad became a guard in the prison system. And then I became a guard in the prison system. And I just switched over to pre-release, but I'm very guard mentality. She said, what I realized in this course is that if my dad had done this program, I would have had such a better job. And I want this for all the staff and everyone. And then so she was able to bring us in a bunch of times into her prison and dealing with the therapeutic community of guys that she was dealing with. And she tried to get us to do more staff trainings in the, it's been harder than we thought to do more staff trainings in system. But we've had people participate in our program that are staff. And it's great when they mix in, together, we're all doing it together. It's tricky because we are asking them to be vulnerable and share from their real lives. And they have a power differential that's real, And so for them to do that in that prison is a little tricky, but they can choose how deep to go and how much to share.
Well, I love this so much. I'm so glad I asked. I love knowing that the work expanded, but also just that you're creating the openings. I hear that it's hard, but that the opening is there for a shift to happen. You
Yeah.
know, in Gestalt therapy, what we're wanting to do is disrupt homeostasis. And so when we create any opening for a shift to happen, homeostasis has been disrupted. And so the system is never the same again. We're also looking at the way that we're all social beings influenced by the environment to be in a system that they have no control over, that they're literally imprisoned within, and to still create that inner change and also systemic change relationally is powerful. It's so powerful.
It really is. It's so powerful. It's so exciting to me that, and at first I was nervous. I'm like, are we going to give them skills and they're going to go out in the yard and get killed or something, that they're going to be too
Right. That's
vulnerable or
legitimate. Yeah.
open?
Yeah.
And we created like a release of harm pretty quickly because we were scared of that, But now that we've done it with over 1,000 people, and people have just been so fired up about it. And everyone's like, no. When I ask that, they don't worry about that. Like, we can handle that part, One of the stories, we got a letter from a guy who got our workbook. We created a workbook during COVID called Finding Ease in Isolation. And, workbooks aren't normally a part of authentic relating. It's all, just relating. But during that time, Jada, that same woman, asked us to create a workbook. She's like, people are going to be alone in their cells. They don't have anything. And so we created this workbook called Finding Ease in Isolation. And it got distributed all over the United States and Canada. And we got a letter from a guy in California, and he said, I'm a lifer, and I am doing this workbook with our the this woman brought it into our AA group, and it's so incredible, and it's changed my life. And because I'm doing it, all these other guys are into it, because if a lifer does stuff, other guys are like, wow, he's been for life, he doesn't have to do this. And so it's inspiring to the other people to actually engage. And he said, so we're doing this work, and then we all went out to the yard, and we were just sitting there, and we were watching the yard, and there was this new guy. He's like standing there by himself, and we see him start to cry. And we all just like got up, and we went over to him, and we stood around him with our backs to him, and we're like, just let it out, brother, let it out. And he said, we never would have done that if it wasn't for this course. We just have this way now that we want to just care for each other and allow people to be more real.
That is so truly incredible. I've got tears in my eyes. So beautiful. Chills all over my body.
It really is. And just the stories like that. I'll tell you this other story, because one of the things I love about this work is that, we're in these environments where a lot of these guys don't, they only talk to people that are, their same skin color. In prison, the gangs are really along racial lines. They kind of let go of like the particular gang they were in on the outside, and the inside, they're in the gang that's their skin color. And the guy that leads it is called the shot caller. And so in this particular group, it was the 2-day program, and it happened to be freezing out. Like it was like below 30 degrees when we got there the morning. And they come into the circle, and I'm so, what's alive after yesterday? What are you noticing? And one of the guys says, I try to do every program that comes here, and we don't get that many programming, but when we get it and it's more than one day, every single time, like half the guys show up the second day and everyone's complaining about the program and whatever and how stupid it is or whatever. Today, it's freezing outside, and we had to stand outside and wait for the door to open. And everyone showed up and no one was complaining. And he was just like, I've just never seen anything like this before. This is so incredible. And then the guy next to him, black guy, says, yesterday you asked us to do the exercise with someone we would never normally talk to. He's like, and I picked that guy. And he points to this bald white guy across the circle. He's like, I would never normally talk to that guy. It's like, but we did the exercise together, and I realized that we had so much in common. And so after dinner last night, they all sit with their own people at dinner. It's like, I asked him if he wanted to sit down and talk. And we sat down and talked for an hour and a half. And now that guy's my brother. And they literally, Harmony, got up in the middle of the circle and they hugged. And I was like, oh my God.
Oh,
The camera is like, it's so beautiful
so
to see these
beautiful.
things happen with these very hardened people, but now just opening up and softening and reaching out to one another.
Yeah, it reminds me of something I heard in Authentic Relating when I was in that world. And it's if you don't like somebody, it's because you don't know them yet. And to just take that time to really actually get to know somebody. It shifts everything.
Right.
I would love to know how you're funded and if anybody wants to get involved, how that can happen. Because such
Yeah.
amazing work you're doing.
We've been doing this now 7.5 years, and we
Yeah.
started from just like from nothing, just from a standstill. And we've got the train out of the station, and now we're like going at full speed, and things are going well. And so I'm really proud that we've made it this far. 7.5 years is kind of a threshold, I think. And so how we're funding, we really are funded in a few different ways. And one is by grants. And I'm so grateful that we Caring for Denver is one of our main grantors, and they gave us 76,000 last year and 112 this year. And they're caring for Denver, so they're only supporting our work in Denver. They'll only support people that are in Denver now. And so we get to do a lot of work at Denver Women's Prison. We go there every Friday and every Sunday at Denver Women's, which is so phenomenal. And then we're also starting to do work in the Denver community through this grant. And we're working at with Denver Community Corrections, which is men and women, but this is a men's reentry facility called the Morehouse. And we just started working there. And they chose to like, let's first do a staff training. So we're just doing the staff training right now, which is so great to do the staff first, and then they'll be able to talk to all the people that live there, the case managers basically that are doing this. And so that's happening, and that's really exciting through a grant that we have. But we don't yet have grant money to really support our work outside of Denver to that extent, so that we have the stability outside of Denver, which is where most of the prisons are, outside of Denver. And there are 19 state prisons. And so how we fund that work is mostly through individual donations, from anything from $10 a month all the way up to, however much money people want to give to us. And we do have what we call the Ripple of Human Connection, which is our monthly giving program. And so on our website, there's a little tab that says the Ripple, and people can give to that, which would be amazing. Any amount monthly is so, so, so appreciated, because that really helps sustain the organization. And a one-time donation is also super appreciated. We call it like a splash is a one-time donation, or a ripple is the ongoing donation. And if you join the ripple of human connection, then every month you get just a short email that is a story about a particular participant and the ripple that they're having either inside the facility or outside the facility. And so that's really how we're funded. It's an exciting time. I feel like more people are learning about us. We're mostly working in two different prisons right now outside of Denver, which is in Canyon City at Colorado State Penitentiary, which is built as the Colorado Supermax, which means that it was built for people to be in these tiny cells 23 hours a day. Well, Jared Polis made it illegal to, first of all, he made the death penalty that has gone away in Colorado, thank God. And people are not supposed to be held in a cell for more than 20 hours a day. But they often are, because what happens when a bunch of guys are held 20 hours a day in a cell and then they're let out in a small pod to be together? As you can imagine, they're not in a great mood. So somebody does something to somebody, or, and bad stuff happens, really bad stuff happens. And then they're like made to go in back in their cells, like for several days of sort of punishment for the bad thing happening. And it's just so heartbreaking. And we are working with those guys. They come into our program from being held in those cells for however many days, and they come into our program and they're in there with also the incentive guys. So at the same prison, about 20% of the guys in the prison are in the incentive unit. And they have to do all the work to keep the prison going because the other guys are not allowed to work, so they do all the kitchen work and everything else. And those guys are also in the program. So we're in the program together, which is risky for them. It's risky for all of them to be in the program together. But people always ask me if I've ever felt afraid inside, and I honestly have not. I did not feel afraid at all.
I believe you, and I'm also just so struck by how lit up you are. Like you seem energized by this work, not
Yeah.
even depleted by it. Like it's so life-affirming.
It really is. It's so life affirming. It's so life affirming because when you go in there and you're like, these guys live in this situation, and yet they come out and they're like so grateful for us to be there, and they're so alive and excited, and they have the gumption to get up every day and face another day, with some sort of like, optimism and hopefulness and kindness. I'm like, I can do this too. It gives me that inspiration to approach each day with gratitude.
Yeah, and this is just such a testament to the power of connection, like true connection. You're not going in there to try to fix them or change them. You're really giving them the tools to
Yeah.
stay in connection with themselves so that they can connect with others. As we start to come to a close, I'm just wondering if there's anything that you want to say about that, like for people who've never experienced anything like this.
We are looking to grow our program, and looking for more leaders and volunteers just to come in with us. People can come with us potentially down to Canyon City if they can give up that much time in a day, generally during the week to go down and be part of the program. Sometimes we need volunteers on Sunday at Denver Women's to go in, and that's where you get to kind of dip your toe in just for an hour on a Sunday to see what it's like to be with the women there. And so those are sort of volunteer opportunities. And we also have an event towards the end of the year that people want to be on the event planning committee. That's also a great way to volunteer. And, obviously all donations are super welcome.
And as you're talking, I can see the ripple effect. I like that you call it ripple because I can just see like every person you touch, everyone that they touch from there on out, it's a different way of being. It's magnificent.
Thank you. It really is, and I didn't speak much about the impact on families and breaking generational cycles. Really, what we're about, that's so much the ripple, is about breaking generational cycles of violence and abuse and neglect and addiction and incarceration.
Yeah.
And it's really happening. That's what's so exciting in this work, is I actually see that happening.
So amazing. Well, I really do hope that people listening reach out realnessproject.org. And I'll have the link obviously in my show notes here too. And I love that there's so many ways to get involved, so many ways to learn about what you're doing, and even just be a supporter from the heart and just knowing and sharing this with others.
Yeah, and I do want to mention that one of the best ways to start, if you're interested in getting involved at all, is to go do the art level one through authenticrelating.co, which is Art International, to go do that program first and like see if this is your jam and if you love this. And then if so, then contact us and, you know, about volunteering. That's the best way.
So are your volunteers already all trained in authentic relating practices?
For the most part, yes.
Okay. Anything else you want to say before we close our time here?
Just thank you so much, Harmony. I love that you reached out and that I got to share this with you and your community.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you so much. If you found this episode meaningful and want to deepen into the practices of transpersonal counseling, check out our trainings at awakentherapist.com. We have live, online, and go-at-your-own-pace offerings that are designed to empower you to unlock the magic of psychotherapy. Thank you for continuing to learn the art of creating a truly sacred healing space for your clients.